Thank you, Kevin. A really, really interesting presentation. Right, with no further ado, I'm going to hand over to Captain Neil Woolacott, who is ex-Air Force, leaving in 1990, went on to fly with Jersey European, which is now obviously known as Flybe. He's flown all of their aircraft types as a line captain, as a training captain, and is now their flight safety manager. Over to you, Neil.
Thank you very much, Anne. And I must say what a privilege it is to be invited to talk to you today. What I'm aiming to do is to just show you how we do it in Flybe, and from there hopefully pass on to you and to get feedback, things that we're doing right, things we may be doing wrong. I've got to do the commercial bit first, I'm afraid. We're operating Q400s with an aeroplane at the moment. We have 60 of them, and the brand new Embraer 195. Embraer 195, we were the worldwide launch customer for that aeroplane. We currently have 14 with an option of a further 12. We're waiting to see what happens as far as the option's concerned at the moment. A little bit about us. 13 countries, 190 routes, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I've done it. Okay, let's get on to our safety management system. We encourage all personnel to report everything. We don't make any definition between what they think may be a safety incident or just a routine occurrence. We just want reports on everything. We use the Vistair SafetyNet tool as the main software, which I will summarise shortly after the next few slides. It's a very good user-friendly system. The most important thing about it that it is web-based. So we can get access to that reporting system from anywhere. PDFs, crew rooms, internet cafes, whatever. Pilots, cabin crew, anyone can report from anywhere that has internet access. We also operate the famous Just Culture. Again, as we've seen earlier, it's a very difficult process to implement. For us, the biggest problem is deciding what is a negligent act and what is something that you can expect to see. If we allocate something as a negligent type of action, and then the ensuing process is applied, whether we are right or wrong in the eyes of everyone, it is seen as some sort of management action. And it isn't until you get out there and then explain exactly what did happen, it's where you then get the understanding of the dangers or the consequences of this negligent act. What do we do with our safety reports when we get them? Well, as part of the safety management system, all the reports come in from all areas. We, as many airlines these days, have a lot of third-party operators. Ground handling agents are not our own. They're third-party contractors. Refueling agencies, caterers, all sorts that supply and service aeroplanes. We actively encourage all our third-party handling agents to use our approved reporting system through the SafetyNet tool. That has been taken on board by them very, very well, with open arms, in fact. In fact, we're getting a lot of reports from a lot of our third-party agents. Obviously, the air crew submitting air safety reports and cabin crew submitting air safety reports on the SafetyNet system, along with our engineers as well, filing all into one centralised department. Centralised department, they're manned primarily by two safety coordinators and supported by a team of around 10 quality auditors. Their sole job is to look at each one of these reports and allocate a report with a risk and a descriptor. The descriptor is accurate, or needs to be accurate, because it needs to go to the right area of the business for investigation. For example, a ground handling occurrence will come through here and then be sent into the ground safety team. Flight operations, anything, human factors errors, come down through the safety management system, into the central system, and then across into flight operations where I sit. Again, the same sort of thing for engineering. The risk is also quite important to us. When I first started doing this, and Stuart sat here in the audience as well, was my predecessor, we had somewhere in the region of around 40 to 50 safety reports per year. We're now in excess of 4,000 safety reports coming in from crews. So we need to allocate some sort of priority. It's very important that we can actually see the wood from the trees. Crews tend to report absolutely everything. That is something that we encourage, and we don't want to try and stop that. But the important thing, as far as we're concerned, is the initial risk allocation to prioritise the good from the bad. From there, five main areas of safety investigation. Five trained safety investigators. One in the flight operations world, in flight safety, one in the cabin safety world, ground safety, and two engineers, one looking at human factors and one looking at purely at component type failures. When an investigation is complete, then it's fed back into the safety net system. It's run back through our central safety system for quality. Initial issue has been addressed, the root cause found, and an investigation fully completed. Once it's gone through that process, it is then fed back directly back to the reporter. It's fully identified to the reporters. However, the system that we use can display de-identified information to all our remainder crews. So pilots, ground handling agents, engineers can all dial into this system and get full feedback from other people's mistakes, errors, or occurrences. That, to us, is very, very important. Excuse me. Just to sum up, then, our safety reporting process. We need it on a safety report to start with. Our central safety department would determine the ASR reference and the risk. Cross-refer against the CAP 382, which is the document which the CAA requires us to report in certain incidences, known as mandatory occurrence reports, MORs, to be sent to them. All MORs are then emailed to the Civil Aviation Authority. As I said, the system is fully web-based, so it works on an email system as well. We can send out PDF formats straight to air traffic control agency, third-party handling agents, all that sort of thing. So the whole administration can be done through one system. Providing that we have all the details and a full investigation is then carried out, root cause action and responses are then entered back into the safety net system. When flight safety is satisfied and investigation is complete, then we'll close it. Our aim is to run a 28-day time period. Safety net system, just to sum up what we found most useful about it. It is fully electronic, fully transportable, easy to use. It contains a full audit trail of anyone that's looking at it. It gives us full trending facilities. We can use it at remote locations. Direct link in with our flight data monitoring system also. It has a lot of default type forms, so it saves mucking around with various different types of issues. For example, an air prox or a bird strike. There are certain things that we need to know about, and the default forms ask those questions. And, of course, it's approved for use directly by the Civil Aviation Authority as well. As part of our safety management system, we've developed a safety plan, and I won't go into it here and now. It's a 35-page document. But what it does, it sums up our goals and actions for 2009-2010. I just want to run through this really to show how our safety reports are actually then implemented into the safety management system. First of all, monthly, we have postholder meetings, or the ASC of the AOC postholders meet once a month. This meeting is chaired by myself as the flight safety manager. And we discuss in that meeting, certainly within flight operations, every single safety report that has been filed. We look at it, reassess it, and then if necessary, we'll change risk on that particular event. From there, we have a slimmed down version, which is then taken to an operational safety meeting. That's chaired by the Director of Safety Quality and is also attended by various directors from different areas of the airline itself. The serious issues, or significant issues, should I say, are then to the Production Operating Board and the FlyB Non-Executive Director Safety Committee. It was very important for us that we had a non-executive director committee because they didn't have a direct input into the costing of safety. So to them, the important goal was safety. And safety, as we advertise, is our number one priority. And financial decisions and safety, we feel, don't really go together. Hence the reason why we had a non-executive director safety board oversight. From there, major, significant, medium risk events, whatever you like to call it, are then presented to the Fly Group Board, who actively participate in our risk assessments all the way through the process. I just want to show you what we've identified this year and for next as our main five top issues as far as us as an airline is concerned. First of all, we've already heard about loading errors today. Loading errors, third-party handling agents go hand in hand. We have to try and fix this problem. They are still growing to us. Ground icing, this year especially, we have seen three of our airplanes attempted to be dispatched with clear ice still on the wings. Clear ice is not good. Aeroplanes and icing don't go together. The reason why we have raised this to a significant issue is because the icing was found on the wings post-inspections. All our procedures had been followed and complied with. However, we had still managed to find this breakdown. Human factors, along with checklist disciplines. All those errors we are seeing still on the increase. We need to try and find some way of establishing what is going wrong. Is it our procedures? Is it our standard operating procedures? Is it checklists that needs to be changed? We've done this hundreds of times, but we can never really get there. I really don't understand. The Q400, for example, it's not the best of ergonomics on the flight deck on that aeroplane. And we find ourselves putting in procedures to actually overcome poor design issues. We try and take it to the manufacturers. The manufacturers say, yeah, we can fix that at $10,000 an aeroplane. You know, and we have to try and draw a line between the two. You've probably all heard about the Dash 8 Q400, especially in the Scandinavian countries with undercarriages failing to come down. I'm pleased to say, touch wood, that we haven't seen that particular problem. However, we do have a problem with the undercarriage systems on the Dash 8, and it's more to do with the proximity switches on the doors rather than the main undercarriage. But it's giving indications to the pilots that actually the gear may not or may not be down. Altitude busts, altitude deviations are still on the increase as far as we're concerned in FlyB. Again, we know what the root cause is. along with several other issues, the primary problem is poor ergonomics on the Q400. All these issues have been put into our SMS. We are concentrating on them. Every report that we get in on them, we look at on an individual basis and then try and fix further down the line. I've talked a little bit about risk assessment. And again, it's an area that we really have struggled with. We've come up with this current system, which really does seem to be working for us. And it's primarily from Embraer. But we've taken elements of the RAF system, we've taken elements of ICAO and EASA, and sort of tried to get the best out of everything. The biggest problem that we had with allocating risk is that it's always very subjective. One person might look at something and say, that's fine, that's not a problem. And yet someone else may say, well, that's right off the top of the scale. So what we've tried to do is to follow this process. You get all the data in, as Kevin said earlier. Once you've got the data in, it's no good just sort of sat there. You need to do something with it. So we need to identify what the hazards are in that data. We can identify the hazards by looking using at trend systems and all that sort of thing. We then evaluate those hazards within certain scenarios and then actually quantify the risk, which is probably the most difficult part. And then based on that particular risk, we'll then take a decision process and then implement the process that we've taken and then carry on monitoring. That's very important. We've got to see whether what we do has actually worked. So this is what we came up with, and happy to share it with you today. That's our priority system. Right at the bottom, we've got no safety relevance. Something then it's causing an operational disturbance. Eventual reduction on safety, and then onwards and upwards, which we hope we never see. We draw a line. It's a very grey line. Okay. With a very good open reporting culture, you will get reports that aren't a particular safety concern. However, it makes the crews feel good because they've reported it. We don't treat them any differently. We always feedback. We always give feedback information. Because the moment we stop doing that is the time that the important one is then failed to be reported. But us in safety, we have to draw a line somewhere. So this is what we've come up with. Excuse me. We made it as easy and as simple as possible. Four main severity classifications: minor, major, hazardous, and catastrophic. Each of the departments that we've looked at earlier, whether it be flight operations, ground safety, has their own specialist trained investigators and are experts, in inverted commas, in their own fields, hopefully. So they've got a good idea on where a particular event lies as far as the severity classification is concerned. The probability level, well, again, we rely on past data. Okay, we've got a database, a huge database, and using that database, we can come up with the extremely improbable, extremely remote, probable, or frequent. And it's a very simple process from there. We take, for example, a minor incident, we give it a 1, and then say it's a remote, so we go 1 times 3 gives a 3. And then if we're not sure whether we've got this bit right or not absolutely sure whether we got that bit right, we will then put a level of control in. And that level of control is designed to overcome the human sort of subjectivity, if you like. And we've put numbers of sort of 1 to 2 on there. So for example, if we're not absolutely sure whether it is a remote, but it could be probable, what we'll do is go a 1 to a 3, and then we'll put a level of control of 1 in, which makes it a 4. And from there, we get this. We came up with a 4 on the previous slide. That gives us a D4, and it's coming into causing operational disturbance. but it's coming in towards improving the system reliability. From about this point, we need to start taking action. The system, the risk analysis system, looks after itself for repetitive defects, recurring defects, and all that sort of thing. Good. They use that risk index to actually put it into the maintenance facilities as well. At Flybe, we've got a huge maintenance facility in Exeter where we carry out all our major checks on aircraft. And with the Scandinavian landing gear problems on the Dash 8, we did do a risk assessment on that, although it wasn't our own aeroplanes. The reason that we decided to carry out a risk assessment is because we didn't know what the problem was. We didn't know what the root cause was. And until we were sure what that root cause was, we took the action of grounding our fleet, the Q400 fleet. And we did full inspections at Exeter, which took 3 days before we were absolutely sure that none of our aircraft were affected. That was the action of using that risk matrix. Yes, it cost a lot of money, but it was worth it. Because we were sure when we put their airplanes back into service that we were not going to be affected by the same problems, the two accidents in Denmark. What I'd also like to do, a very important element of a safety management system, is the flight data analysis element as well. For those that don't really understand what it is, this is what it is. It's a systematic method of assessing, analysing, act upon information obtained from digital flight data recorders. It involves the proactive use of flight data to identify and address operational risks before they can lead to incidents and accidents. Now, obviously, I've heard several individuals coming up to me and saying, yeah, it's spy in the sky, or it's Big Brother looking at us. It isn't. That's the most important thing. With this piece of kit, it can be very, 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 very useful to us. Okay, because it shows what's going on for real in the aeroplane. It doesn't involve us trying to fish through the details of a report. We can always use a report to match it up with the data that we've got from flight data recorders. But the two go in hand. And when you've got that, you've got a very, very strong safety management tool. For those that haven't seen it before, what we're trying to do is, if I take the Heinrich pyramid, the standard Heinrich pyramid, all these incidents here we're not sure about, may not have been reported. These are the ones that we know about, and then it leads up to the one that we all never want to see. With the flight data monitoring system, we hopefully can reduce the size of that triangle, taking out the incidences that probably are minor. Pilots probably don't know if occurred or have happened because they're looking at something else. And with that information, we can shrink the size of this triangle and therefore make the assumption that the one big red one at the top won't happen to us. Who caused the problem? It doesn't really matter who caused the problem, as long as we learn from it. That's the most important thing. We use a non-punitive company policy with an open safety culture. Okay? And I run the system, so I've got to be trusted by both the crews to be impartial and maintain the confidentiality of it. And at the same time, I've got to be supported by the management to get on with it. What I can't do is to sit there and ignore serious occurrences or serious incidents. And this is where the biggest problem lies with the JUST culture. We have to have a robust process in place to make sure that negligent occurrences are dealt with properly. And we will always, always encourage the unions to come into our system at that point. But until that we get to that point, And it doesn't happen very often. But when it does, then it can have the effect of destroying the just culture that we built up. The system and the technology will be absolutely worthless or even destructive if the human factors are wrong, i.e. the management that are running this process. I just want to show you the management process as far as flight data is concerned. We download all the flight data from the airplanes. It comes into the flight safety department. I look at it, I verify it as a pilot. We don't have anyone else involved. Again, it's subjective, I know, but we try and remain autonomous throughout this process. We use BASIS to cross-check against previous incidences. The system that we use was BASIS designed. If I need to, I will contact the pilots directly, not the management, the flight safety manager, who is known, hopefully, as an independent person. It's an independent department within the organisation. We'll chat about it, and then hopefully the human factor elements will come out. It will be recorded, but it's all de-identified. The managers do not get to see this. Okay? All I do is produce trends and then discuss events at review meetings, which happens every month. And we all learn from other people's mistakes. If necessary, from there we'll change our procedures, we'll change our manuals. And more importantly, we've got our own safety magazine, which we publish quarterly, and events with the crew's permission, totally de-identified, will be published back out into the wild world. We also share this information not only within Flybe, but a lot of external agencies, a lot of airlines that we also share information with, the MOD. So we're treating, not holding all our incidences just within our corporate organisation, but sharing it with the industry. The ground-based flight data analysis system, we were the first, and I believe we're still the only company now, downloading all our aeroplanes wirelessly. So as soon as an aircraft chocks in somewhere, the flight data recorders talk to a wireless receptor, and within about 20 minutes of that aeroplane chocking in, I'm able to look at the flight data. Okay, I'm able to then replay and risk analyze within the flight data system. The advantage of this, of course, is that if a pilot has a problem or thinks that a part of the airframe has been exceeded, they can ring me within 10 or 15 minutes of arriving and say, "Neil, I think I've got a problem here. I think I might have just oversped the flaps or whatever. Can you have a look at it before my next dispatch?" And 9 times out of 10, we can actually do that. All maintenance and development of the system is by British Airways, and they have been an incredible support to Flybe over the SESMA system and are continually there. I'm a bit of a technophobe, and Paul Harrison at British Airways has always been there for us night or day. So it's a very, very good, robust system. What do we get out of it? We get trends, we get flight data charts. The middle one here gives us a fleet view. It's what we call MaxVals. So it shows exactly how a particular fleet has been flown. It's very useful if we change procedures to quickly and very, very proactively monitor the effect of the procedure that we've been implementing. It's also good, and the way we sold it to the grown-ups were that we're able to trend fuel for you. We can look to see what is the most economic speed to fly these aeroplanes against fuel burns and all that sort of thing. So they loved that. So we sold a safety piece of software on commercial grounds, and they went for it. And in fact, the new updated system we've just had installed now by BA was the only extra spend that the company have organised so far this year. Very useful tool over here, and we use this for pilot debriefings. Pilots are able to see their events again in real time and learn from them. This whole process, it's very important to remain confidential. It detects exceedance of predefined operational envelopes and provides information on the extremes of the operation. What we won't do is just trend operating procedures, because if we start doing that, then it's been given the tool for policing, and it mustn't be seen in that way. It takes a set of defined measurements on every flight and provides information on the whole operation, which then quantifies the normality, and then that's when we reapply our procedures if necessary. It increases pilot knowledge and skill, gaps in the training system, improves our operating procedures, makes things safer. It encapsulates environmental limitations as well. One of the biggest problems that we have at the moment is Milan. Milan air traffic always tends to want to keep our airplanes up high, and then pilots trying to get in on very difficult approaches, trying to slow down, come down at the same time, and they start getting the old tunnel vision. And with the tunnel vision coming on, concentrating on one thing, other things go out the window. And we've identified that as a problem and have then sent out a re-education program, both to air traffic controllers and our pilots. We can invite air traffic controllers into our full flight simulators to see what air traffic are asking to do as versus what the pilots are able to do with the aeroplanes. CRM is very important because it means that everyone is standard. And with the thought that everybody is watching them, then people are going to start flying as if every day is a check flight. That's what we have found. And the culture at remote operating bases tends to go out the window, which is fantastic. Prior to the FDA system, I can remember our Channel Islands pilot saying, oh, no, we don't do it here. We do it this way, or we do it that way, which is in total opposite to what the company robust procedures have indicated they should be doing. So it eradicates all of that. And these last slides just show really the advantages of flight data analysis. I understand that the railway industry is now starting to do it, and provided it's used correctly, it's a very powerful tool. Sorry about that one. we can feed back into engineering. It detects misuse, which could then impact reliability of the aircraft systems. Risks on new areas of the operation. Milan is a good one that I've just mentioned. It can identify hazards that people, us, humans, might not actually see that are there. The company can take appropriate corrective and then the preventative measures. And it allows us to build a big picture of everyday operations. Ideas, some trends. These are FDA trends. And remember, they are actual events. I've taken this out of 2006. But as you can see at the top here, this is a Dash 8 Q400, and we can see that the biggest problem that we had with the Q400 was that pilots were trying to get nice smooth landings out of this aeroplane. The aeroplane is a horrendous thing to land. It's got a very stiff undercarriage, and pilots' pride is there trying to smooth out the landing, and we were found that the aeroplanes were floating far too far down the runway. So from there, we were able to drill down and find out, well, where's it happening? We can see here, Edinburgh. And I could drill down. Crews were doing it. All it would then take is a phone call from me saying, hey, Blogs, do do you know you're floating two-thirds of the way down the runway? Yeah, I know, I'm just fed up with this thing coming on the ground as it does. Well, can you try and put it down in the right place? And it stops. The risk is hopefully gone, just with a phone call. And no one else needs to know about it. Thank you. Hopefully it's shown some way of how we implement the tools and process that we have within Flybe. Thank you.
I was about to say, don't run away, Neil. Neil has to go shortly, so before I ask my railway colleagues to come up on the stage, I was just going to see if anybody wanted to ask one or two questions to Neil before he disappeared.
Yeah, that's a very good point. We certainly, as far as the Q400 operation is concerned and the issues associated with that particular aeroplane, we're lucky enough to have the chair of the operators' steering committee with Bombardier. Bombardier, the aircraft manufacturer, do listen, and they do redesign systems, but it takes time. We have discussed the issues at length with the regulators and our flight ops inspectors and indeed the Air Accident Investigations Branch, which we work very closely with, have come down and shared with us other experiences. We recently worked very closely with the AIB on an incident in the US, a very sad one in Buffalo, which again was the Q400. And we have actually, through the use of our flight data system, have seen that happen to us. The only difference is the recovery. And again, it's a part, one of the issues was identified as a possible design failing. That has been taken to Bombardier themselves, and they are working on it. They are constantly coming back to us and saying, yeah, we're trying to fix it, but it takes time. They've been trying to sort out the full-time altitude selection system on the Q400 for the past 4 or 5 years. But they've told us that it's coming, it's being implemented, the system is being implemented next year. So we'll wait and see. It's continual development. We're working very closely with Bombardier. But the crux of it is that the aeroplanes are certified and they are safe to use for passenger operations. We just have to make sure that our processes overcome some of the shortfalls. And nothing actually is designed perfectly. Nothing is ever really designed to have a perfect human and machine interface, we have found. So we're continually working with the manufacturer on the issues that we've had. I hope that addresses the question that you've...
Okay, and just one more. The good news is, although Neil won't be here, he's kindly put Stuart into the hot seat to answer any questions later on his presentation. So just one from the front and then we'll move on.
No, there's probably a very good reason for that, in that we will identify reports that require human factors. So we'll only send out the questionnaire to the pilots when we need to start with. It comes with an accompanying letter, and if we try and keep the human factors report as short as possible. There's only, I think, 4 or 5 questions in there. It's currently undergoing redesign at the moment. If we pick up anything on that human factors report, then we invite the pilots down to come down for a chat, or we'll go to them. And we tend to do more face-to-face human factor debriefs than we do written ones. We do chase up the human factors report. So when we send them out, we do say to our crews, look, we need this back. We need it back within 10 days. If we don't get it, we'll send them a reminder to send it back. If we don't get that, we'll send them another reminder until they get fed up and fill it in and then send it back to us. So we don't get too much of a problem as far as that's concerned. But it's what we don't want to do is to saturate either.
Okay, thank you very much. Right. Thanks.